Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Is realizing the full value of your network just a dream? Intel is bringing AI everywhere, building solutions to help modernize and monetize 5G infrastructure, making it possible for telecommunications providers to expand services and drive efficiency by reducing costs and saving energy. The next wave of networks starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Intel is the spark for the dreamers who do. Those with the ambitious, out-of-reach ideas, begging to become real solutions. They share a vision for how our world and our lives can thrive when bold thinking meets strong silicon. They dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy through the power of supercomputing. They dream of trust and privacy for all, of advancing and expanding education by bringing AI everywhere. Intel is the spark to start something new, to build something better, to know that no dream is too daring when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline, it's teamwork, and it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest-growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle-market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's STIFEL.com.
Stifel Nicolaus and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Hello, and welcome to What Goes Up, a weekly markets podcast. My name is Mike Regan. I'm a senior editor at Bloomberg.
And I'm Valdana Hayek, a cross-asset reporter with Bloomberg.
And this week on the show, well, the ink was barely dry on all those headlines saying that the S&P 500 was in a bear market last week. And then it began to rebound a bit. And we never did get a closing price that was 20% or more below the index's last record in January. So is that it? Bear market canceled? And the lows are in? Well, maybe not. We'll talk with a chief investment officer who is not so sure and thinks that we're in store for a bit of a cruel summer for stocks. But first, Valdana, I need to let the listeners know that you're actually in jolly old England as we speak.
Yep, I'm in London.
How's that going?
I'm having a lot of fun. The Bloomberg office is so huge and it just looks like it's never ending. So I just keep getting lost and running into the same people over and over and asking them for help. And they're like, I already told you I can't help you. So then I just keep moving on to the next person and the next person and the next person. And I never, never, ever find my desk.
That's kind of like how you are in New York, too, though.
Even worse here, honestly. I'm just wandering around all the time, like on the streets, in the office, the mess. But I'm having a lot of fun.
Those friendly Brits, I'm sure, are steering you in the right direction. But Donna, I got to say, we did get two more reviews in of the podcast on Apple Podcasts.
Oh, your coercion strategy is working.
It is. Let me just read this one to you. 5 stars to Vildana for keeping Mike in check. I don't know what that means. I don't know what that's referring to.
Whoever wrote that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
But great podcast. One of my favorites. They also volunteer to be a tour guide to either of us if we are ever in San Diego. I could use that a few weeks ago, but.
I love San Diego. It's my number one favorite city in the world, I think.
Number one.
Yeah. You know why?
Because this person just gave you 5 stars.
That's right. No, I'm just kidding. Because it's sunny 365 days or 364. So, you know, it like rains once, maybe.
One day a year, exactly.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
And a second one came in. It said, wait a second. Do we know Vildana's high school nickname yet? And the answer is
not yet.
I'm worried that your nickname might be a little boring. So I'm going to, if it's
stretch this out,
if it's too boring, I'm going to offer the nickname that the transcription service offers for you.
Those are really good.
The software we use to transcribe the podcast, because they're pretty good.
They're really, really good.
And just for you, my crazy thing this week is British themed. So just throwing that out there for you.
Okay.
But let's bring in our guest. I'm excited to meet her.
Yeah, it's Victoria Green. She's the founding partner and chief investment officer at G Squared Private Wealth. Victoria, thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely. I was laughing because I definitely need a GPS to get around. And the worst for me is when people are like, go north or go south. I'm like, I'm not Lewis and Clark. I need a left or a right here. Like, please don't tell me to look at the sun for directions. I'm going to need a little help.
I feel the same way. But so you're joining us on the podcast for the first time. I was hoping you could just start out telling us a little bit about your firm.
Sure. So G Squared Private Wealth is a boutique advisory firm. We focus more on ultra high net worth and planning and portfolio management for them. We tend to be a little bit boring with our asset allocations. You know, we're not trying to be a hedge fund, but we do think positioning and active management is important. But at the end of the day, a lot of our clients are the don't mess it up clients. So, you know, we're not looking to necessarily be day traders or anything like that. You know, we never got into the meme stocks. We're a little bit boring that way. Like, I feel like traditional asset allocation now, like when you're trying to talk about it, it's just not sexy anymore. Everybody wants to throw in something in there that just is like liven it up. But we do think it's important, especially now. You know, we're working very closely with clients about where do we allocate capital, where are we on a bottom or a bear, how long this may last. And so we spend a lot of time. We have a pretty small book. We're about 550 million, but we've got under 100 clients. So we spend a lot of time with extensive planning and portfolio management for the individual.
I like that. Don't mess it up strategy. That'd be a good name for an investment.
Well, I usually
term.
Use a different adjective, but I don't think that's allowed on this show. So yes.
A family podcast like this. A lot of kids listening.
Absolutely.
Out there, especially since the meme stocks took off. So we'll see. But, you know, Victoria, I always wonder with a firm like yours based in Texas, you know, if you were managing money in California, I'd wonder in, say, Silicon Valley, I'd wonder if everyone was, you know, very bullish on tech and venture capital. So in Texas, I have to wonder, you know, does the energy industry sort of influence your clients? You know, are they gung-ho about energy, or are they looking to diversify energy? How does it sort of influence the investment decisions of high net worth clients in Texas?
Yeah, it probably makes them a little more bullish on the energy industry. But some of our clients, actually, we run X energy because it depends on what their exposures are. So if you have a privately held company or you're on a board of a public company, you've already got that exposure. So we're actually kind of trying to diversify and mitigate the concentration, because everybody in Texas is well aware that the oil market is cyclical, right? So you ride up the good times, but you know there's a flip side to it at some point, you know. And this last decade has been super hard in the energy industry. We had like 5 crashes within 10 years. And so there's just this wariness about, okay, yes, we are bullish energy and the energy transition, while ESG is coming and electric's coming, it's going to take a little bit longer to adopt. And we are seeing that play out here in 2022. So probably I would say, not to generalize, but the attitude of a lot of our clients is that the death of energy was over exaggerated. So not to say that there aren't concerns about ESG or climate change or things like that, but it tends to make them a little bit more willing to have a foothold in that segment. So I do think it's a little bit of what you know does influence what you feel comfortable investing in. You know, you have the same thing happen in California. And, you know, if you're in San Francisco area, you probably are very, very comfortable with your tech exposures and a little bit more comfortable with the early stage and the small cap tech and the innovators per se.
That's very interesting to me that an X Energy portfolio is, I mean, it makes a lot of sense. You know, they know the home base industry, but to get exposure to everything else that they bring in you guys, it's pretty interesting.
Yeah, it's this last decade, like I said, especially like 14, and you know, you had energy well below 2014 when you had it well below $30, and you just couldn't get it really above $30 for years, you know, and the Saudis and OPEC kind of crashing that. I distinctly remember that because I was on vacation for Thanksgiving when OPEC changed their policy, and it really, really messed up my Thanksgiving. So I've never forgiven OPEC for that. But, you know, I think it's something about investors always have to be aware of their, you know, totality of their portfolio and wealth. So let's say you have your salaries tied up in energy or natural gas and your stock options are tied up in that, or your net worth tied up in some sort of energy exposed business, whether it's in, you know, the services or fracking or transportation. You just have to be aware of how cyclical that business is. And you kind of want to counterbalance it and say, yeah, I want my portfolio, but I don't want to be focused on energy. I want it to be diversified, because anybody that's lived in Texas for more than 10 years knows at some point this is going to come back down. You know, how long it stays elevated, if this is like a 91 where we saw that spike on the Gulf War, or if this is an 08 where again we saw a spike but it came back hard, you know, how long does oil stay above 100? That's, you know, the $1 million question down here. We do tend to think it's going to stay elevated a little bit longer just because of the supply demand dynamics. And we did see a lot of things shut down in 2020 when we had negative energy prices and people were, you know, paying you to take and store oil. I mean, wow, what a difference 24 months makes between, like, literally they were paying you to take it and now we're paying, you know, $5 at the pump to get it.
Well, I know that you had sent us over a note talking about some of the energy names that you do like. So maybe could you walk us through some of them? I think it's like Devon Energy, EOG, Diamondback Energy. And I wanted to ask you, because we had Daniel Yergin on the podcast recently, and he was saying we could continue to see the supply crunch, meaning that prices are going to continue to stay elevated. Is that also your expectation for the energy market?
So, and this goes into the greater theme of like what's happening in the world right now and the deglobalization. And as you may see Russia removed from the market, you're seeing all of this rebalancing of supply and demand, and it's hitting commodities harder. It's not just energy it's hitting, it's fertilizers. It's all of the exports that are and some precious metals. I think, what are they? It's not lithium. It's what's their precious, palladium. They're a huge, huge supplier of palladium. And so you're seeing this rebalance and shift, and all of these things take a lot of time to redistribute and build up supply chains. So our base case is oil is staying elevated for the next 18 months. I don't see it coming back down. I don't see the demand crunch happening. You know, China, you kind of live and die by China some, but if you look at the travel and the consumption in the United States and Europe and where the trends are, most every developed nation does not have a zero COVID policy anymore. It's we're going to just deal with it. I know COVID's like a dirty word these days because we're so tired of talking about it, but it's still there. I mean, that's what's affecting China and Chinese demand. And Chinese demand may also get a little messy because China and India have shown willingness to buy cheap Russian crude. Some of it's geographically easy for them, as well as that, you know, if they can buy it at $30 and they're, you know, concerned about their economic growth. So we may see some demand wane in China, but generally speaking, 90, 100 a barrel for the next 18 months, I think is distinctly possible. You have not seen this wildcatter mentality come back in, right? So if you look at the graph of the Baker Hughes rig count, you know, you saw like coming up to 2014, we're at like 1600 rigs. And then obviously we had the OPEC change and everybody lost their ass, to be quite frank with you. And so you saw this grand de-investment in the oil and gas industry. And even now we're well below peak. We're still well below pandemic era oil and gas rigs out there. So you have seen oil companies, and you'll see this theme in the oil and gas stocks that I like, the Devon, the EOG, the Fang, you know, and the Pioneer. They are U.S. based with a big footprint in the Permian. They have low break evens and they're absolutely pushing cash to shareholders. They are not putting it back on the ground. They are saying, thank you, shareholders, for trusting us. Here's your money back. Like, really sorry we didn't make you money for a decade, but here you go. Let's make some money now. But you're not seeing that wildcatter mentality that happened with other oil price spikes, because that would happen and you'd have this massive inflow of let's get more rigs out there, and just, you know, supply and demand would eventually flip it over. If you look at the slope of how the rig count has increased, it's a much lower trajectory. Nobody's really pushing a ton of money back into CapEx. So we love the stocks that are giving our shareholders just a better return right now. Like Devon Energy at $100 a barrel is like a 16% free cash flow yield. They're pushing out 50% of their free cash flow in a variable dividend every quarter. Like, you're talking a lot of money to sit and wait. Plus you might get price appreciation still because they keep making more money. And if you look at where earnings revisions are happening, about the only place that we're thinking earnings are going to go up is energy. And so the PEs there are actually still, even with this massive price moving up in a lot of these stocks, the PEs are actually still very nominal and very value oriented.
I was writing about this earlier this week, where there's this ETF. It's like a cash cows ETF. Yeah. The ticker is really funny, COWZ. But it's been seeing tons of inflows. And when I was looking at the names within it, they're energy names, and it's companies with high free cash flow yields. So does that make sense to you to see something like that?
We want cash. We want money. Right now is playing defense and survival. Like, not to sound super dour about the world, but my like 2020 theme is let's survive this year with as minimal damage as we can. Like, we're trying to avoid falling on hand grenades and avoid it like a complete blow up. And I do think the energy sector, I'm aware of commodity price spikes. We can go back and look through all the charts. We actually did this whole big research thing of what's killed off oil markets in the past. So what killed off the 90s oil market, the 80s oil market, 08, and then the whole 2010 decade, which was a complete loss decade in oil and gas. And then obviously 2020 implosion. But when you look at these companies now, you are getting massive cash flows back. And I feel like the cash flows are sustainable. So Devon Energy, I love, they're my top pick in the space. So I do talk about them frequently, but they've got only 25% of their oil hedged. So they're actually seeing a lot more return. You know, that was one problem a little bit with the E&Ps last year, where you still had pretty high hedges coming out of 2000. And then you see this fixed plus variable dividend. Now, other people have modeled after it. It's not as unique anymore, but they pushed, I think, $1.27 as a quarterly dividend. It was a great yield. And if you look at how that's grown and how they expect their free cash flow to grow, they're doing everything they can to make their shareholders reap the rewards that they're getting. And their share buybacks. I think they authorized another $2 billion, and they've literally bought back 3% of their market cap. So if Devon thinks their stock's worth owning, you know, share buybacks are one of the good uses of cash, and it's a way to enhance your shareholder value.
You know, Victoria, I'm wondering what you think is causing that sort of, you know, as you describe it, that wildcatter mentality from returning. Is it simply just a legacy of the busts that you've talked about in the last few decades? Or, you know, people love to politicize oil production and claim it's a result of, you know, Biden and energy policy. But is it, you know, is there anything that policy could do right now to increase production? Or is it just, you know, like you said, those busts of the last few decades have really left their scar, and no one wants to rush in and oversupply the market right now?
I think it's more they don't want to oversupply the markets. I mean, like if you, again, if you look at the rig count and how we've messed up some of these other bull markets in oil, it's been an oversupply eventually happens. And that's typical in most commodity markets, right? Commodity prices spike, you bring more production online, now your supply and demand rebalances. We never actually get balanced. I don't think I've ever actually seen a commodity market that we would consider balanced. We're either undersupplied or oversupplied. And quite frankly, the last 2 years, we've had this whiplash between the two. And that's something we'll talk about frequently down here. The Biden administration and the U.S. energy industry do not have a good relationship. I think that's putting it mildly. I think there's a lot of angst about government regulations. I think there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of rhetoric about, you know, the Biden administration is definitely pushing greener and into climate change issues. And the oil and gas industry definitely felt a little unloved. But I'm not sure there's anything the Biden administration could do. Yeah, they could open up some more leases, but you actually have a lot of people that have a lot of leasing and permitting. And if you look at the timeline between when a company can buy a lease to when they actually like get that gasoline in your car, it's years and years. I mean, there's permitting, then you actually have to drill it, then you actually have to like pump the oil out of it, then you got to transport it, then you got to refine it, and then you got to transport it to gas stations. And all of those things take a lot of permitting. So could it be eased if regulations were eased? You know, that's the rallying cry of less regulation and less government coming from Texas. But at the same point, it's not going to immediately make an impact on the pump. You know, look at the release of the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. That did nothing. You know, at the end of the day, that did nothing to relieve it, because some of it, you just don't have enough refinery capacity right now. You had some refiners go offline in 2020. Most refineries are refining at 90%. So could the industry and the government have a better relationship? Yes. Could that foster a little bit more drilling? Yes. Is it going to bring back a lot of supply quickly? No. Just because of the timeline it would take between like, yeah, I'm going to go get that lease and get it all permitted and get it drilled. It's not like it's showing up at you know, the gas station tomorrow.
And just to bring us back to the broader market, obviously every conversation I've had this week has revolved around whether or not we've had a bottom, whether or not we've hit it or probed it or tried to form it. Or, you know, I've heard some people saying that it's going to be a rounded bottom. It's going to take some time to form. So I'm just wondering what you think and what you're expecting from the market.
I don't think we found a bottom yet. I know Friday was a really great turnaround. We had that important 3815 support level held, and that was huge. And that kind of caused that intraday reversal. You know, yesterday you saw a rally off. I know we're on the tech side. We are approaching that very long-term trend line that we might break through. I just think we're not done yet. You know, I think this is a little bit more the first leg, because I always ask, you know, what is our catalyst? How are we going to get growth? You really haven't seen a lot of earning revisions. And so we talk about, well, valuations have come down. Yeah, the P part of the P&E have come down. What happens when the E starts to go back down too? You know, there's two parts to that. And if we don't have earnings expansion, or at least earnings staying status quo, you're going to see valuations maybe aren't quite as low as they're looking now. You know, that being said, it has held. I just don't think we're done yet. I think this is more of a relief rally. If you look for the signs of capitulation, the 90% down days, the VIX spiking, you know, we're just not there yet. Yeah, cash balances have definitely increased. And yes, we've seen some equity selling, but not a well and true panic. Like, not to sound like a snob, but I need like a solid panic. You know, we just haven't seen that solid absolute capitulation, everything selling off. You know, we aren't there yet. And then my concern also, where is your growth? Where, you know, margins are definitely being squeezed, and we're going to have to wait until the Fed can send the economy into a recession to stop some of this.
And my impression is you think that's kind of inevitable, that, you know, the Fed's not going to be able to bring inflation from 8% plus back to their target without,
Mike, have they ever?
Triggering inflation. Not that I know of. Yeah.
I mean, I would love, and I would challenge somebody to say, has the Fed ever navigated a difficult situation well? Not to rip on them. It's a thankless job, because they're either too early, too late, too harsh, too easy money. You know, they never get it just right. But you look at any other situation, we've had high inflation or any type of bubble, irrational exuberance, you know, Greenspan, you know, you go through your history here, and I'm just like, prove it to me. Show me a soft landing. Show me that you actually can navigate this and not just like nosedive. And I don't think there's any way.
Well, I guess the only way people think it could happen is if these supply chain issues sort themselves out, which seems unlikely with China sticking to this COVID zero policy. I mean, does it all kind of go back to China as much as the Fed?
Yeah, I would say the Fed, you know, if we were going to talk about the heavyweights here and what's going to impact it, one is Fed, two is China and global demand. And China is definitely a wild card. It's always a little questionable what their growth numbers are. I feel like you got to take that a bit with a grain of salt. Whatever China says they're doing, you kind of have to divide it by a factor of five to see what it's really like. You know, what's lurking in China's market? You know, the housing over there? Is that kind of rolling over? How much problems does the Chinese market have? Not just on demand, but the zero COVID policy. And then, you talk about moving supply chains and resiliency in supply chains. Again, these are not easy things to fix. You can't just build a chip factory and call it, Tuscaloosa in a day. You're talking about massive resources. And if you look at it, like 99% of all semiconductors start in Taiwan almost. They're just the mecca, and they have the technology and the expertise. And it is extremely, the number of circuits they're putting on semiconductors, which is like the problem child for supply chain, right? Like if you're going to talk about supply chain, semiconductors was like the number one thing that really messed up the entire world. I don't think you can move a lot of that stuff easily out of Taiwan because they're putting so much on those tiny little chips. It's such a specialized build with specialized technology. You can't just like pop it up like you can build a McDonald's.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Intel is the spark for the dreamers who do. Those with the ambitious, out-of-reach ideas, begging to become real solutions. They share a vision for how our world and our lives can thrive. When bold thinking meets strong silicon. They dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy through the power of supercomputing. They dream of trust and privacy for all, of advancing and expanding education by bringing AI everywhere. Intel is the spark to start something new, to build something better, to know that no dream is too daring, when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline, it's teamwork, and it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest-growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle-market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at stiefel.com. That's STIFEL.com.
Stifel Nicolaus and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Intel is the spark for the dreamers who do. Those with the ambitious, out-of-reach ideas, begging to become real solutions. They share a vision for how our world and our lives can thrive when bold thinking meets strong silicon. They dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy through the power of supercomputing. They dream of trust and privacy for all, of advancing and expanding education by bringing AI everywhere. Intel is the spark to start something new, to build something better, to know that no dream is too daring when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
Hi, I'm Ron Kruszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Can I ask you about peak inflation? Because I was reading some notes this week that actually were talking about China, where we had everybody saying in the last couple of weeks that maybe we have hit peak inflation, and yet we now have China coming out of those lockdowns, and that's going to sort of have this put further pressure on prices. So what do you see in terms of inflation?
Peak, maybe, but declining, no. So I think there are different magnitudes here. So are we going to continue to see 8.5 year over year increases? Probably not, right? So have we hit kind of our peak growth in inflation? Are we going to see inflation moderate or moderate quickly down to a more normalized level? No, I think we leave this year at a six handle. Like, I think there's just too much pressure. The only caveat to that would be if the labor market and the housing market crashed. You could see those two things obviously rapidly bring down inflation. But look at, you know, if you start to take apart inflation, we're spending a lot on services. Airlines are super happy, right? They're charging us 11-12% more, and they can keep hiking tickets and we keep buying them because we're so excited to travel again. You know, same thing for most services right now. You're seeing more and more hiking on the upside. And then look at the supply constrained areas like food. Food is actually something that I think is a huge risk. You know, we're a little more secure here in the United States, but if you look at what happened in Ukraine and all of the areas that Ukraine supplied wheat and some of the basic staples for, you're seeing a supply taken off the market that's going to put more pressure on everybody else. And then we have some of our own crop problems. You know, farmers are struggling some with weather, higher fertilizing prices, higher diesel prices. And so, you know, no, we're not having like a major flu outbreak or swine flu where we're having to kill off herds. But at the same point, I think you have a lot of pressure on food. You have a lot of pressure on the fuels. I don't see the fuel inflation pressure. So you start kind of parsing apart CPI and some of the inflation and saying, what do I think has wiggle room? I do think maybe rent and average home prices could come down. I mean, the mortgage, you know, some of the housing data we're getting is not super amazing. So I think you could start to see possibly that side roll over. But a lot of the other things, energy, food, and then services, I don't see that coming back.
Yeah. I think that food supply story is about to become a very dramatic story over the next few months. As long as this war continues, it's alarming. Victoria, value over growth. It's sort of the Crips versus the Blood story in markets all the time. I want to ask a very simple question. It might seem oversimplified, but the more I read about value and growth, the less I think it is. But how do you define value? What's your definition of a value stock?
I mean, one goes to PE, or the price you're paying for your dollar of earnings, right? And so when you look at a value stock, you want to say, hey, we don't have this great growth trajectory. We expect some growth, but I'm paying a moderate amount of premium for this dollar of earnings that you're going to give me. So I feel like it's reasonably valued for what you're going to give me and the fact that you're not going to have exponential growth. So I think, again, it's trading at a reasonable price, a reasonable valuation based upon the cash flows, dividends, and the earnings that you're expected to have. Now, I think there's a lot of growth and drag value kind of dressed up a little bit differently, because the question is the sustainability of earnings. So when you look at a value stock, is that stock truly a value stock where I feel like I'm not overpaying for your cash flow in the future if their earnings are at risk? And I think a little bit, you know, and we can talk about the duration of the stock and you know, what's happening in the growth market. But I think that's one thing investors need to be aware of is the trajectory and projection of earnings and cash flows for those companies. And how stable and how resilient are those? And that's why I think you saw that retail wreck of a week last week, and because you saw a lot of retailers saying, "Look, we're hitting inflationary prices, and we're not going to be able to actually generate as much money." And a lot of those retailers are kind of a little more retailer staples. You know, your Walmarts, right? Let's pick on Walmart. Yeah. You know, they're like the end all be all of consumer staples. If you think about consumer staples, you think about Walmart. And the fact that they warned about where their growth and their margins are going to come from, even though it's not a hugely overvalued stock, if you look at it on matrix of price to book or price to EBITDA, price to earnings, it still took a hit because there's like, if you're not going to generate that much cash, maybe I don't even want to pay, 15 times. Because it's just not worth it if you're not going to generate enough earnings. So I think quality is key, but sustainability and where those cash flows come from, how exposed are you to a consumer slowdown? How resilient are you to the consumer pocketbook taking it? Because the consumer is being asked to absorb so much, right? When you think about it, rents are high, gas is high, food is high. Those three things are something no human being in the United States can really avoid.
Right. Yeah. Walmart's a good example. I was thinking Target too. I mean, It's, you're looking at a stock with an 11 or 12 PE right now, and everyone's saying value, value, value. Well, it's trickier than it sounds, I guess.
It is. And technically they're discretionary. I don't know exactly how we drew that line between Walmart being staples and Target being discretionary because, I mean, I guess the Target maybe is discretionary, but Target is staples. I'm not sure how we want to delineate that. But yeah, they're the example of, how much risk is their margins and their earnings going to be. And you are seeing changing in consumer buying habits. Best Buy, but you also have super mixed signals right now of what Best Buy. I mean, Nordstrom, somehow Target had a horrible earnings, but Nordstrom, it was just fine and excited and upbeat. Like that to me was a little bit of like I needed a drink after reading that because I that one's a little crazy to me.
Yeah, it's kind of the opposite of what you would expect in a recessionary environment, or at least concerns of a recessionary environment.
Victoria, so can you talk about value versus growth? Because I've been seeing some notes recently that say the sell-off in growth has it's gone on too long. It's overdone. And maybe it's time to start, dipping your toe in the growth space. What do you make of that?
So you're catching a falling knife, or, the other way I look at it, you're kind of looking for diamonds in a pile of turds. But you are. You're looking for things. And we have one, like NVIDIA is one we really like. I may have a little, we'll see what they look like after earnings. But you look and you have NVIDIA or Apple and some of the big ones, the luster of the FANG stocks or the Magma stocks or whatever we're referring to them now. I'm not cool enough to know what the acronym is. It's always, I don't care if their name is Meta, it's always going to be FANG. I'm not calling
Neither
it.
Neither are we.
Yeah. The large cap tech. They're the poster child for the problems. I think it's just so much so. Let's start parsing apart the tech market, right? Social media is one, I think, and Snap scared everybody yesterday of where are the advertising dollars going to go? And social media, I think, is so fickle because as soon as you have, and even a Netflix goes into that one, your subscription-based or your eyeball-based business, and especially ones that you're trying to make the teenagers and the youths of the world engage so you get the biggest bang on your buck for advertising. I think it's a fickle world that in 10 years, is Facebook still relevant? I'm not sure as a social media platform. So if you try to stress test some of the earnings for a Facebook, a Twitter, a Snap, and say in 10 years, is this platform still relevant? It's hard to know. I mean, I was kind of thought we'd have flying cars by now, but not yet. I mean, not unless you hit an overpass a little too fast. We're no flying cars yet. But, some of those things, your trajectory on where the tech market goes, I think is what makes growth so hard. And that's why we like NVIDIA, because they're kind of continuing to modify. It's not just gaming. You also are getting into your data centers. You're getting to the self-driving cars. You're seeing the company continue to progress. And Facebook is trying to do that, but quite frankly, everybody's kind of, the metaverse is something that we're all struggling with, even though multiple tech companies now are talking about the metaverse type of situation. They want this all-encompassing universe. It's something I think we're having trouble kind of agreeing to move to this encompassing virtual reality world. But then again, I'm an old millennial, so I barely know what's hip anymore. So I maybe shouldn't be opining on what happens. But I think that's the hardest problem with the tech industry. So is Apple still relevant in 10 years? I think absolutely, because Apple has definitely continued to modify. They're getting more into health. The first person that gets their smartwatch to do blood pressure or blood sugar and do it well is going to absolutely have a massive growth engine, because certainly health is pushing more and more virtual and mobile and you know, and ways that people can manage their health has changed. And I know Apple, that, you know, they can do the EKG and they can do heart rate monitoring. But as soon as you have those two things, that's going to rapidly change how millions of people receive services. So I look at Apple and I say, yeah, they're continuing to evolve. And I'm sure at some point I'm going to pay $2,000 for a stupid phone, but I'm all in on that. Like, I've got my AirPods, my phone, my iPod, my watch. I mean, I couldn't leave Apple. You know, I could never divorce Apple. It'd be so messy. Like, I wouldn't even know what to do. They make so many decisions for me. They make it easy. They're like, cool, we have this setup here. Do you like it? I'm like, yeah, that's great. Thank you for putting that for me. That's very helpful.
Mike, I was invited to a conference in the metaverse this week.
A conference in the metaverse.
Yeah.
A conference in the metaverse. I will say, I think, Victoria, the metaverse may be the only place you'll get those flying cars anytime soon.
And I'm a little confused. I mean, so if you go to a conference in the metaverse, do you have to have like the VR goggles? Like, in your little VR avatar, or do you just like show up in a Zoom room like this and it's a horrible like non-conference conference?
I think it's a Zoom room.
That is a pathetic conference in a metaverse. I want like VR and avatars. Yeah, like, come too. On.
Wait, that means we're kind of in the metaverse right now on this podcast on Zoom. Holy cow. The only innovation I would like from Apple is a watch band that actually stays on your wrist. I love the watch, but the band keeps falling off for some reason. Anyway.
Yeah.
Just a memo to Tim Cook if he's listening to this show. Yeah.
I think the thing that Apple is very good at is their base accessories kind of suck. So they're like, please upgrade to your $400 Hermes watch band.
I know.
So I think they're just calling you cheap and poor. And so
I think that's it. Or they know I'll lose the watch eventually and have to buy a new one. So. But Victoria, you know, the big question this year is obviously, how do you play defense in this stock market? I got to say, though, when I look at the bond yields where they're at now, yes, I know they're still negative on a real basis, inflation adjusted. But if you have some sort of faith that inflation is going to come back to 2%, you know, are treasuries attractive yet? Are they looking cheap to you at all?
Yeah, I mean, I like them more at 320 than I do at 275 on the 10-year. And I think that's one of the things driving them down. And I also think this is what is not voting well for the markets. You know, the first part of the year was such an anomaly where you had treasuries falling at the same time you had the market selling off, which typically that correlation is not something that's very high. And so now you've seen the correlation break and normalize, which is markets kind of in the toilet and treasury market is rallying. And that does mean, you know, the 10-year rallying some. It's a little less. That's more about long-term inflationary. You know, if you look more at the 2-year and what's happening with that, that's more our short-term expectations. But I do think like 275, I mean, what isn't negative on a real basis at an 8.5% inflation? I mean, the only thing not negative on a real basis is stocks and even then not dividend yield. So I do think parking some and playing defense there is good. You know, I'd watch your high yield bonds. I think a lot of people don't know what they own in a bond fund. And a lot of them, until recently, the best performing bond funds were the longer duration, higher credit, right? And so sometimes if you're trying, you're looking in your 401k plan, you're looking at your menu and you're seeing these total returns or your, you know, anything that's opportunistic, you know, and that's my keyword. If there's opportunistic in a bond fund, that means there's probably credit risk. And so I think people learn the hard way a little bit more about credit risk. But I think you do play some defense. I mean, 275, you know, if you can get, you're seeing the short-term rates come up. And again, you might be losing on a real basis, but you can at least make something. And we're coming off such a period of low rates. I'm like, I can buy a 6-month bond at 1.5. Like, oh my goodness, like that's just amazing. Like, I'm so excited for 150 basis points. So, I mean, some of it's just a more normalization of where we might see yields. But, you know, I do think it's worth it to have a little bit in that. You know, the one that's been surprising is gold. Gold really hasn't been, you know, if you talk about how do you play defense in your portfolio, is it cash, treasuries, other bonds, alternatives? You know, some of the alternatives have done very well, you know, but you also have seen gold, which is up, but it's not in this high inflationary period. You really have seen it struggle to break 1900 and stay above it. And it keeps trying and it keeps really not breaking out. So I think that's been eye-opening to talk about this year of both bond and or gold and Bitcoin, the tried and true inflationary, supposedly inflationary offsets haven't really done what they're supposed to do. And I think Bitcoin's had a lot of a gut check this year, that in a period of massive monetary spending and printing money and high inflation, that was like the two core tenets of why Bitcoin should work, to offset those two things. And it's down, what, 50% this year? 60%?
Yeah. Well, those core tenets are kind of a moving target, though.
It depends.
So I take it you're not a crypto bull.
No, I mean, I do believe in blockchain and I like the idea. Every now and then it hits 30, I'll throw $1,000 in my Coinbase account. But I mean, I look at this and say I think it's going to really depend what coin and how does it get used, right? So we talk about cryptocurrencies and it's not just Bitcoin or Ethereum. You have all these different coins, but how are they actually going to be used? You know, I know there's the novelty of technically you could buy like a Tesla with it, but that's such a inefficient way because the price fluctuates so much, as well as there's a lot of, you know, the mark to market. How do you know exactly so what the price of Bitcoin is? And, you know, anytime there's a free app, which I'm aware of, that you are the product. So that means somehow when you're transacting, it's not just a transaction fee, but it's very hard to know what the markups may be, or true pricing transparency on crypto is a little bit harder. It's very much a frontier market. Regulation has not really been figured out yet. I mean, the IRS figured it out real quick. I mean, they're going to tax it to, you know, yeah. So the IRS was the first one to catch on that, hey, we got to do something here. But I think the existential question of, is it a currency? Is it an investment? Is it an alternative investment? You know, and then how does it get used and adopted? I think those are yet to be seen.
Yeah. All right, Victoria. Well, if you try to pay for your flying Uber in the metaverse and they only take crypto,
Dogecoin. So.
They only take Dogecoin.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Intel is the spark for the dreamers who do. Those with the ambitious, out-of-reach ideas, begging to become real solutions. They share a vision for how our world and our lives can thrive. When bold thinking meets strong silicon. They dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy through the power of supercomputing. They dream of trust and privacy for all, of advancing and expanding education by bringing AI everywhere. Intel is the spark to start something new, to build something better, to know that no dream is too daring, when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So, there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus & Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Intel is the spark for the dreamers who do. Those with the ambitious, out-of-reach ideas, begging to become real solutions. They share a vision for how our world and our lives can thrive. When bold thinking meets strong silicon. They dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy through the power of supercomputing. They dream of trust and privacy for all, of advancing and expanding education by bringing AI everywhere. Intel is the spark to start something new, to build something better, to know that no dream is too daring when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline, it's teamwork, and it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's STIFEL.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
My craziest thing does have to do with crypto.
Yeah.
Oh, imagine that. Imagine that. You found something crazy in the crypto world.
I know, right?
About?
It's rare.
Holy cow. Yes. Let's hear it. What's your crazy thing for the week?
Well, you'll remember that a couple of weeks ago, I was in Miami and we had the big Bitcoin conference there. There were 25,000 people there. It was like lots of parties and techno music. And the mayor of Miami unveiled a Bitcoin bull statue. And my craziest thing is about Miami Coin, which is the city's cryptocurrency. Its price has fallen 95%.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, the stable coins are 95. A little less stable. I mean, that's been quite enlightening for people.
Yeah. I like how Vildana's in London one week, Miami the next. You're like an international woman of mystery. Yeah. They don't let me out of the zip code here. I can barely go to lunch without someone complaining.
You know, I've been watching the flight attendant, so I definitely think you're a CIA spy now. Like, 100%.
I've been watching it too. What a fun show, right?
It's a good show. It's good. I think season one was a little bit better than two, but two is still very, very entertaining. So definitely gonna assume you work for the CIA now. 100%.
I gotta watch that one. Yeah.
It's like a murder mystery in a TV show.
Oh, that's right up Vildana's alley.
Oh yeah, I love that stuff. I love it.
Never heard of it. You know, Victoria, you say you're an older millennial and you're out of touch. Well, I'm practically a boomer. I have no idea what's going on anywhere.
He really doesn't.
It's true. But that's why I have Vildana to keep me up to date on the hip. And
I need like a cheat sheet sometimes to talk to like our next gen clients when I'm talking to their kids. Because I'm like, I don't want to be like the parody where it's like, oh yeah, that's whack. Like, you know, or whatever the hip terms are. So I need a translation. I think Google should come out with that, right? Like how to speak next gen. So, you know, and I still don't know if it's a GIF or a GIF or a meme or a mem. Like, I don't know. I'm 50-50 of what I'm going to say and how it gets pronounced. So I definitely not cool in that regards.
I try to rely on my teenage daughters, but they're too far, too avant-garde. They're too ahead of the curve
Done a TikTok dance yet? Have they gotten you into it?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I've been in a lot of TikToks I'm not even aware of, I think. They try to catch me doing something stupid. And
that's my worst fear. That is my worst fear.
I'm huge on TikTok. Yeah, oh, yeah.
That I'm going to be the background of somebody's TikTok, and I'm going to like become this internet sensation for like stuffing my face with a churro as people are dancing or something like that. Yep.
I'm pretty sure that's where I'm at already. But Victoria, how about you? What's the craziest thing you saw in the past week?
Has it only been a week?
We'll give you a month. We'll give you a month of crazy things.
A month of crazy things. It's a good month to be crazy. I mean, I'm going to have to just go with some of the weird intraday reversals we've had. Like, I know that's not super crazy, but again, we've seen those like 1,000-point moves in a day. And sometimes you really don't know, like the invisible hand is been at work this month. So you've seen some of those weird reversals. And You know, that to me is a little surprising. And then obviously I think the weird thing for me is, gosh, that last 30 minutes of trading, I'm like holding my breath, because sometimes it's like, oh, we'll get this reversal. And sometimes it's like, now watch me drop. And I don't really like that, but I think the speed of some of these moves is just, it's fascinating to watch.
It really is. I mean, I guess it's poor liquidity to some degree, but I ran a few charts the other day, and Bitcoin has actually been less volatile than the S&P on like a rolling five day basis.
So this week's sign of the apocalypse. I mean, I don't know what else might be. Like, get your apocalypse bingo card out. But Bitcoin being more stable than the S&P 500 is, I mean, you'd be a winner if you called that one.
Yeah, exactly. But that, believe it or not, that's not the craziest thing I saw in the last week. As I promised, mine is British themed, in honor of Vildana's very large expense account for the week. I'm going to have to take a look at your expense account after this week, Vildana. But if you would like to live like a royal, is how the Bloomberg story starts out. How much would you pay for Buckingham Palace? Some firm called McCarthy Stone actually did an appraisal of Buckingham Palace. I don't know why. I think just to get their name in the news. They are a developer of retirement home communities. So perhaps this being the poshest retirement home in all of England, they appraised Buckingham Palace. So Vildana will tell you what time it is, Victoria. It's time to play Price is Right here on What Goes Up. What do you think the appraised worth of Buckingham Palace is in British pound sterling, by the way? Not US dollars, obviously.
I mean, is there much difference now? I mean, we're almost going to parity. That used to matter a little bit more.
That's a fair point. That's a fair point. Okay, I'll accept either then. Vildana, what's your appraisal for Buckingham Palace?
Well, I think British people would definitely say it's priceless, right?
That's true. That's true. And it's not really, it's obviously not really for sale. Brexit hasn't been that bad on the royals. They're not actually selling it. Mm-hmm. Let me give you a little details on the listing here.
Okay.
775 room.
Whoa.
Palace. 775 rooms.
I'll go with £550 million.
£550 million. Victoria, what's your guess at the assessed value of Buckingham Palace?
Well, I'm going to go with the Price is Right rules, and I'm going to go £549 million British pounds, because, right, we're playing Price is Right rules, so closest without going under.
Yep, that's right.
So you're going a dollar under?
Yeah,
a pound
I want
under?
A dollar under.
Okay. £1.3 billion.
Oh.
It's a hot real estate market in London, I guess, is the answer.
Wow.
Yeah, I've also heard castles aren't that super fun to stay in. They're kind of drafty and cold.
Yeah.
I think Vildana's probably staying in one. I got to check her expense account. It's a good time of year, though. It's nice and warm in London. But now, here's the other thing. The total value of the UK's royal property portfolio is £3.7 billion, up £460 million since 2019. So, and this is my favorite line of the story. If the 10 figures for a London home seems a bit steep, McCarthy Stone also calculates Buckingham Palace could be rented for £2.6 million a month. So
a month.
A month. Yeah, maybe that's the way to go.
You know, some YouTuber would rent that out for a party in a heartbeat. It would. Yep. I mean, that's the state of our
conference or a crypto conference.
Right. I don't know if you get the guard for that price with the fuzzy hats and the marching in front and stuff. I don't know.
No, I went down that rabbit hole a little bit, because I Googled what the Duchy of Cromwell was, because I was very curious. You know, they started with the whole Meghan and Harry drama, and like the duchy and the finances started coming out. And as an informed American, I had to Google what a lot of things meant. But yeah, the royal family has they own a lot of land. It helps when you've owned it for hundreds and hundreds of, if not thousands of years. I mean, talk about, you know, a real estate investment. That's been huge for them.
Yeah. Buy and hold at its finest, I suppose, is the...
is it diamond hands? The Queen's definitely got diamond hands.
And no estate taxes somehow. I don't get that.
But when you set the laws, you get to do what you want.
That's right. That's it. That's the key. That's the key to good investment. Get to set the laws. But Tori, I think that is all the time we have, but we really, really appreciate your insights this week. Great to catch up with you, and I hope we can have you back someday.
Absolutely. It was fun, guys. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you so much.
What Goes Up will be back next week. Until then, you can find us on the Bloomberg Terminal website and app, or wherever you get your podcasts. We'd love it if you took the time to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts so more listeners can find us. And you can find us on Twitter. Follow me at Reganonymous. Vildana Heyrick is at Vildana Heyrick. You can also follow Bloomberg Podcasts at Podcasts. What Goes Up is produced by Stacey Wong. The head of Bloomberg Podcast is Francesca Levy. Thanks for listening. See you next time.
Your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Intel is the spark for the dreamers who do. Those with the ambitious, out-of-reach ideas, begging to become real solutions. They share a vision for how our world and our lives can thrive. When bold thinking meets strong silicon. They dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy through the power of supercomputing. They dream of trust and privacy for all, of advancing and expanding education by bringing AI everywhere. Intel is the spark to start something new, to build something better, to know that no dream is too daring, when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So, there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus & Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take and Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.